management. All right, it's fine. But anyway, I just interject. TC, yeah. I have really had not sat down and interviewed TC. There are a lot of people around Raleigh that I hope to do, and he remembers a lot of it all. TC dropped out at some point. I don't know what year. He never finished.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
That was all that. I mean, that was a big blow up between, you know, when Jim and then decided to really, their loyalties were so strong to the Buckminster Fuller thing and dissatisfaction with the school, and they sort of really got very much into the production of things.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Well, let's go on with your experiences.
Well, the other thing is that, well, the third year, I guess we talked more on that, but the fourth year was the first two quarters of the fourth year, I think the game was quarters, and I believe the first two quarters were almost a total loss. I don't remember with our class, they were still looking for somebody. Wait a minute, no, the fourth year, because Eduardo arrived in the fourth year. But they were looking for somebody else in a very senior position, and I can't recall for what.
Well, Eduardo explained one thing to me. He said that the year between, which I've never heard this, between Novitsky's, the year immediately following Novitsky's death, this man Leitziger Pierce.
That's a man.
Was acted as the department head. He was acting department head for that year, which I've never heard.
Yeah, okay, that's the man I was trying to think of, because we had his course, and I knew that he was, I didn't realize at the time, because I was a student, but I did find out later that he was kind of acting, and they were seriously considering using. But that would have been our third year. It was in the fourth year that we had him as a...
Well, he might have been there for a couple of years.
He might have been there 2 years.
Eduardo was, I think, was then appointed as the department head. I think there might have been some question about...
But Eduardo was, I mean, Eduardo arrived and was appointed as he arrived, I mean, right?
As the acting department head. That's my understanding.
That's what I think is true. I do remember it was in the fourth year that, again, informally, someone... Fitzgibbon was in group when we were talking or something, and he was telling us about having met Eduardo because he'd been up for an interview or something like this, and he says, we asked him what kind of buildings he liked, and he said, big buildings. I'll never forget that, because you see, the next thing that appeared, he came and he was his work in Argentina, the Tucumán thing with this mile-long building, you know. I mean, that was then, of course, another thing, bombshell, that really hit the school was when Eduardo appeared, and then erasure for the next year. And but there was also some resentment. You see, I remember that Sherman had grave reservations about Eduardo because he wasn't the elegant gentleman type that Novitsky had been, you see, so that meant anything at all, but knowing Sherman, that was important to him. And I think it was like he was looking for, because he and Eduardo didn't get along very well for some time, I guess. Aside from the story about his coming in with no shirt on, which Eduardo must have told you at least
times. Well, you know, he told me, he mentioned that today when we were at Harry Owens, but I never heard it before.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, he didn't, that's one of his favorite stories. I'm surprised that he didn't.
I tell you, he's told me several stories 2 or 3 times now, but I mean, he wrote out a lot of them, and we talked
amazing,
about them,
yeah.
But that one did come up today. He's been filling me in on a lot of stuff. I mean, a few of them I've heard. I mean, he spent a long time talking today about Buckminster Fuller's tombstone over at Alfred Cemetery, which I'd actually seen, but I didn't remember it very well. But he went into a long thing about how bad it was, how wrong and everything it was.
Well, I mean, another little anecdote is not, it's not Eduardo, but this, I don't know what made me think of it, except I was thinking of the drafting room. But Eduardo was not the one on the corner. This was again in Daniels. It was in the big one, second one, on the back of the building. But back in the corner thing, we were working, I didn't turn the heat off. I mean, the heat was on a timer, I suppose. And it would get cold, and we were working. And one night, it was very cold. Sherman got the idea of getting these barrels that, you know, they had these big galvanized barrels for trash. Putting the top of the thing upside down, he filled it with sand. Don't ask me where he got the sand. Poured gasoline in there and struck a match. This was for heat. In the drafting room. And he had, I think there was one of these things in there. Well, I mean, it wasn't 2 minutes before the smoke was just unbelievable. You had, and everybody was running out. And as I went out the door, Henry walked in. It was at night. How he knew that was going on, I don't know, but I thought, my God, if Sherman survives that. And Sherman was in there madly opening the windows and trying to get the thing put out. Oh, God, I mean.
That's amazing. That's another thing.
I don't know how Henry, I mean, you know, everybody said he must have had a tremendous, I mean, patience and sense of humor in some sense that somehow wasn't. Because, I mean, anybody else would have just said, get out of my school. I mean, you know, you're too irresponsible. I can't take that chance. I mean, this would, the whole building could have gone down.
Sure.
Lives could have been lost. I mean, to be burning gasoline in an enclosed room.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't remember that he was even disciplined. I mean, maybe something was done, but certainly Sherman was not dropped at all. He was still right there.
Let me ask you a couple of specific things. Okay, you had, by this time you had, Bruno, when I came to the school as a freshman, people like you and Bruno were pointed out to me as these outstanding, I was aware very much, I didn't, of course, have any direct dealings, but we, as freshmen and sophomores, the students that were in the fourth and fifth year were really, we thought of them as being much more.
Oh, yeah, well, sure, so did we, of Qualls and people, yeah.
But anyway, I just wondered, and I know that Bruno, when he came to the dedication of the building that was named for Henry Camp Heppner, the building for real Harry Wolf's office design, he said the students were very concerned about when Nowitzki died that there would be someone else of equal stature to take over. And it sounds like he wasn't even there then, or if he came the year after
Bruno?
Nowitzki. Yeah, when did
Bruno was in a second year.
He came
year.
The second year,
so
he knew.
So
he said that the students were very concerned about this, and that they were, you know, that they went through this year looking for someone. And he said, and of course he paid a tribute to Eduardo about that they, you know, they felt that an equally, you know, potent kind of leader came and replaced him. He was trying to build up the notion that Henry had somehow managed to keep the school afloat, that there was a kind of guiding presence there somehow. And everything.
Well, it's true, but the thing is, you see, is that there was that one year when obviously we're caught totally by surprise because
it was
happening in the summer.
It happened right at the end of the summer.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was it.
It was,
I think
school.
You're right. Yes,
it been
right.
But
yes,
a couple of weeks
yeah,
before
yeah,
classes were
right.
Right.
I think, yeah, I forgot it was that late, yeah.
It was extremely late.
So,
late
I mean, to get anybody, I don't, you know, that, and to lose the main, the chief critic and the head of the department, it was really a blow.
Yeah. I'm just really trying to get a sense. I mean, I realize you were probably not as close to it as those people who were a year or so ahead of you, but that's something that I think it was a kind of key issue, a key thing, an event in the history of the school.
And well, you're right. I mean, if you stop and think, what would have happened if he hadn't been killed?
Well, I've thought about it often.
You see, our lives would have been very different, I think. I mean, certainly, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think that Nowitzki was overrated.
Well, that's what Eduardo has suggested to me.
Really? I've never heard that. I've never discussed it with him. I just look at his work, and especially those sketches at India, which were all pretty little sketches, but they were meaningless. Architecturally, so much of it seemed to me was really... Well, I see what other people, you know, eventually did there, like Corbusier. Well, of course, I mean, he wasn't, you know...
I have mixed feelings about that.
I think he loved the sketches, and of course this concept of the arena was fantastic, and that alone is enough to say, well, he would have obviously done some other really marvelous things, and I'm sure that's true. I mean, the sketches that one saw of India, I think, were maybe so preliminary, and so and they were just kind
he
of
he did them all in 2 months. You know, he had that, 2 months there to do that, as well as the planning for the city. And I think I would not be quite as harsh in judging them as you and Eduardo, but I mean, I think it's fair to say that it's questionable what would have resulted had he.
I mean, the arena was really, I think, an absolutely marvelous thing. There's no question. I can see that drawing in my mind right now. It's absolutely.
Well, I tell you the truth. I've been overwhelmed by Mumford's writing about him. Mumford clearly saw him as being the future of architecture. And I had the experience of curating this exhibition of Novitsky's drawings.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
About two years ago. Yeah. And I tell you, if you look at those drawings, the ones that basically of the arena and of the grandstand that he did, which this grandstand roof was as interesting as the arena, I mean, what he proposed. He had about six schemes for that, each one based on a different technology. Mm-hmm. And the drawings in some cases are this wide, where one line formed the roof edge. And if nothing else, I mean, I don't want to spend my time talking about this, but the character of those drawings really just blew me away. Because, I mean, I was looking at them firsthand. I'd seen little tiny things like that of them, but I'd never seen the real things.
Yeah.
And I perhaps have overestimated him as well, but maybe it was natural in trying to puff up the show to do that. But.
Well, no, but that happens. That yes, exactly. But. And again, you can't. Which I shouldn't have said what I said. It's just because I mean, he died so prematurely, and there was some little. I mean, in fact, I don't know much of his work. I haven't seen even. I'm sorry, I didn't see your show because I mean, really, I would love to.
Well, they're there, and somebody, if you ever wanted to come, I could take you up and show you these drawings because they're. See, we have a permanent collection of those. They were
wonderful.
They were left, apparently just left in Dietrich's office. Dietrich, I think, gave them to the Museum of Art. The Museum of Art put them in a drawer, a file drawer, and they finally, about 3 years ago, gave them to NC State. And we now have a visual arts center, which is a small museum that Ligon Flynn designed. And it has, and so they intend to develop a kind of archive of architectural drawings, original drawings. And these are really the only significant things they have.
Yeah.
They have one set of a bunch of Frank Lloyd Wright's, the originals from the famous Wasmuth portfolio that somebody gave them. Not the full thing, but I don't know, a dozen or 15 of the plates from the original 1,000. One of the volumes, I think there were 1,000 original ones printed. In case. They're those beautiful drawings that he published in Germany. Mm-hmm. 1911, I believe. Anyway, but I think they're going to ask. I'm going to suggest that we try to get Eduardo to contribute a number of his drawings. I mean, if nothing else, the sketches from the Peace Garden project. I mean, they ought to be archived.
Exactly.
He's just got them up there in a big stack.
Gosh. Anyway, things at the office,
Yeah, they're gonna be ruined. I think he might like
it. And he doesn't, he doesn't put. He would just soon take all that stuff at the office and just throw it away. He really would. He has no. He doesn't have any feeling about.
I'm gonna broach the subject before I leave. That, is there a possibility that some? And the only problem is I don't want to raise expectations. And I get back to Raleigh, and the director says, "Well, we have room for just so much," and then insult Eduardo, that.
Yeah.
But I think they'd be delighted. Well, anyway, let's get over that.
Well,
I'm sorry, I got.
No, that's okay.
But
the fourth year, I just quickly was. That's right. One semester with Bucky Fuller doing the cotton mill, uh-huh. But then you've got all the information on that, I'm sure. And then Hugo Leipzig appears. The student we really practically revolted because we saw him as just a complete bag of wind, nothing. Mm-hmm. Even I think I don't remember how we revolted. I know we didn't. I really don't recall exactly, but everybody was really up in arms about him. And so then the faculty got together and they said, well, we were with the cotton mill with Bucky Fuller, and then one semester with nothing, supposedly doing something in site in city planning with the line service. I don't know
anything about him.
And so they brought George to teach the fourth year, and George, we had George Matsumoto for the fourth year.
I think that he stayed there from then on.
And then on, I think, yeah. And then of course next year with Eduardo.
And were you in the class that was working on the hyperbolic paraboloids or the stadium?
Hyperbolic. The first year was the stadium with Al Cameron and that class. And then and Led Lee and so on. And then we had the study on the hyperbolic paraboloids and other projects then after that, of course. But that was, of course, a complete eye-opener, because here was somehow how to approach big building design, which we hadn't really... what had we done? You see, through first year, second year houses, and so third year, it was some... this semester with Weizmann was really not very good, and I realized it at the time. Then I was with Jim Fitzgibbon, and we were doing
portable buildings,
shelters and things like this, and I remember doing some kind of probably there was a project on had to do with war, bomb shelter design, but that kind of thing, and then Bucky Fuller's work and that sort of thing. And then the fourth year, so suddenly they realized we really hadn't had anything very much, and the George project would coop the situation at the end of the fourth year, and then we had ran into Eduardo and really got into sort of large scale building design, and then one year was all we really had at that.
You didn't work on hyperbolic paraboloids the whole year, did you?
No, not at all. No, that was probably not more than a couple of months, if that long. And we did baseball stadium, which was the fantastic, and what happened to that?
No, I don't remember. Okay.
That was when we completed just before Thanksgiving holiday. Deadline was, it would have been that early, or maybe it was a holiday. It was not Christmas, it wasn't that long. It was a holiday in which we went home for 3 or 4 days. And we had finished the drawings. And Eduardo said, okay, I'll give you until you get back, you can work. So everybody, I remember taking the things home with me and working them, the first time I'd ever done that, to complete these drawings. And I still remember with delight. I thought I had a really neat solution, and I think it really was. We all worked on it. We brought these drawings back. And so they were left on the drafting table, told to put them here. Someone came in, it was his drafting table, and he needed to do some work. And so he took them off and put them on top of one of these trash barrels that were sitting there, and that's the last thing anybody ever saw of them. Sure,
the whole
thing went out the door. But Eduardo never saw them.
Oh my goodness.
The finished drawings, all he saw were the sketches and so on. We had, you can imagine these things, how you do all this.
Oh my gosh, oh, awful, Fred.
No record.
I can't imagine
anything
worse than that.
Nothing, no record. Well, it's kind of nice, because I still see it's the nicest thing I've ever designed. Because it's all up here.
Yeah.
There's nothing to...
Nothing to contradict.
Contradict.
What a great... Oh, God.
We did... the final thing was train station in Richmond. We all went to Richmond to look at the site and so on, take a field trip and so on.
With some long span structures.
Yeah, yeah.
Memories of the Crystal Palace
probably. But before that, we did some other things, and I can't think what some of the other projects were. Hospital, I think, design we went through. It was the idea. That was to get out of the hospital. It was to, yes, because we would, that was one of those things you studied the size of a room and everything's a modular, and then how you put all this together. And halfway through the project, Eduardo says, you're not getting it all, stop, just finish it, just let the whole thing, and we went on to something else, which was kind of interesting, because that doesn't usually happen. I can't think of other highlights.
During those last couple of years, you'd already earlier had all these visitors that you mentioned. Were there any other kind of key people who came in the last year or two that stick out in your memory that might have I know that, for instance, I believe he might have come after you left. Charles Eames was,
that was after
you
left.
Okay, well, let's just, because I want to kind of spend a few minutes on your teaching there, too, because we'll come back to that. But
well, then, the last year, Henry came around and says, what are you going to do?
Well, you were also taking Henry's course at his
house.
That's
right, we were taking his course at his house, oh yes. And
so he really kind of came on the scene for most of you, and probably in a little bit more.
Well, yeah, we were, you know, Neary was there and all of this, but we had not worked with him. I don't remember. He may have been on, he must have been on a jury occasionally. Certainly, I know when I was teaching, I had him, you know, on a jury from time to time. But, and I think he may have been on a jury, but I don't remember that as students we were aware of the kind of faculty kind of trying to make fun or catch him up on things, like that famous faculty meeting where Fitzgibbon rang the bell, you know yeah. About
it. I
didn't know
aware,
about that.
I wasn't aware of any of the interactions of that sort.
We were very much aware, however, of the interaction between, as you say, the Fitzgibbon, Duncan Stewart side and the other...
The architects, the straight arrow architects.
Right. And... because Duncan could never keep it quiet. He was out with whatever was going on. So. And Jim was to some extent. And then of course there would be Bruno on that side. Yeah. Well, anyhow. But Henry came around and said, "What are you going to do?" You know, well, I don't know. I thought, well, I finished school now. I've got to go to the army or something, because that was the draft was still.
Yeah.
And then I just, you know, get a job or something. And he said, you thought about graduate school, well, I had it in my mind. It never thought such a thing. And he said, well, I think you really ought to, you know, I guess Sherman came to Harvard and John Caldwell and I came to MIT. And I'm sure he talked to John, and Sherman probably knew he wanted to, you know, maybe not, I don't know, but he probably did. Henry certainly gave me the first idea of doing it. And proceeded to write letters to such an extent that he got in, but got a scholarship and all the rest. And of course, he didn't say MIT or Harvard or anywhere. I mean, just, you know.
Did Bruno go that same year? Or a year later?
No, Bruno.
Did he ever go?
Bruno,
I don't think he ever went to graduate
school. He didn't go to graduate school.
But he did teach it at MIT as Eduardo's assistant or something like that.
That's right.
Did he do something?
But that was while I was away, I believe.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's not important. You went on to MIT.
So I came on up here to MIT, and then what happened, and you see, at MIT was that they took on a two student from each school as a maximum. They didn't necessarily take two, but John Colvin and I were the only two from School of Design that year. There were 20 in the class, half of whom were foreigners, I'm sure, like Charles Correa and Michael Braun and Koichi Nagasawa from Japan and Daniel Tremblay from France. I mean, there were people from other countries and so on. I wouldn't say half, but a good deal. And of course, that was complete eye-opener to me. MIT was just the antithesis of School of Design. It was dead, completely dead. There was nothing going on. I mean, Anderson, you know, all I remember about him, seriously, was his sitting there with a cigarette lighter and lighting this, you know, striking the match and talking as he would say something, and then there'd be a long, long pause. Everybody's looking at the match to see when the thing was going to go out, and just before it burned him, he would do this, you see. I told him the story just this past fall when we went to Italy. You know, we were all over that.
Not watching you.
At this point, I think he could laugh about it. So, anyhow. But that's when I saw what the School of Design was, because I, you know, now you can compare it to another school and see. And the thing I could never understand, here was MIT, had this monumental building. There were no barracks or anything like that. Everybody had, you know, space and a proper drafting room and so on. But the school was so splintered that you didn't know anything about what was going on in the rest. Of course, it's true we were graduate class, we're somewhat out of the loop, so to speak. But I think in some sense, I always felt that the separation of that school on three or four levels with the elevator as a communicating thing, of course there were the stairs and you used to say, just absolutely was devastating, and still is.
It was true when I was there.
It still is. And then they put a ratio when he came way off in East Campus, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And now another part of way down in the building on Mass Avenue where the MIT Museum is. Then I go back to Raleigh and I think, my God, here we were. There was barracks. There were two or three barracks, at least two.
Three.
And Daniels. And yet somehow we all felt we knew what was going on. We were aware of the different classes, you know, what was going on in the other classes, what the other teachers were doing. Even though I didn't have Duncan Stewart, I was well aware of, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you really weren't then the distance, you could communicate horizontally.
Yeah,
there weren't elevators.
But also the faculty didn't just stay in that, they didn't just come and go to that class and go home.
Sure.
They were dedicated there for, you know, life. I mean, they were there day and night, and they go into other classes, and they walk and make comments in somebody else's class.
I remember when I was in first year, and Roy Gus says, I made a discontinuous compression structure, made out of sheet metal and some kind of fishing line or something.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Yeah.
And George, and it was sitting there, it was a rather attractive little thing. It wasn't great or anything, but it was, and George came over, and he started pushing it like that. And I remember it was bounced a little bit, and then one edge of it broke, and it came. He said, oh, sorry. I mean, I could fix it. It wasn't ruined. I mean, it didn't fracture.
Sure,
it just, one of the lines came loose or something, because I hadn't properly tied it or something. But, you know, I totally validate that, because I knew who the other teachers were. I didn't know much about the inside of the school.
Well, the people I remember toward the end, you asked me before, I'm going back now to Raleigh, you asked me who came, and yes, Belusky came in the fourth year. I mentioned this last night, I think. And this was the other thing, that the students felt, though these were, you know, big architects from abroad, or from out, not abroad necessarily, but I mean abroad from Raleigh. Somehow there was a feeling, because I think Raleigh is smaller, the school was smaller, that you felt close enough to them to invite them up, not only just have parties where, but private dinners. I mean, Washburn and Sappenfield and I had Belusky to dinner one night. I may have been one other person.
Mm-hmm.
We had Lewis Mumford. I still think it was Nam Gabo, but Eduardo says not.
No, Gabo came to the school.
But he thinks it was not that year.
Oh, okay.
Because he doesn't remember his being that year.
Didn't remember Charles Ames having been there, and Harry and I both were telling
Eduardo
him.
Eduardo doesn't remember that.
He didn't remember that. Well.
But anyhow, because Eduardo can remember every student and where he sat in the classroom and the projects he did. It absolutely blows my mind every time he does this. He can tell me things I don't remember where I sat, and he tells me, and then I suddenly remember, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so those were there, certainly, and in our fourth year, I don't remember the fifth year too much, and who might have come. There was Joe Boaz, because I remember that in Henry's class, that one night, there was his philosophy classes.
Not Joe.
George Boaz.
George Boaz.
George
Boaz. Joe Boaz was the architect.
That's right.
Who came later.
Yeah, that's right. George. And always after the discussion in the class, Mabel would come in with coffee and cookies and tea, which was very nice of her. You see, that was another thing. I mean, nobody ever knew who Belusky was when he was here, and Anderson was way out in Lincoln. It's too far away.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true that we did have a party at Bob Newman's house in Lexington, but anyway. She came in, and I remember she walked over here and was saying that. She put her arms around. She was standing there, but she kind of put her arms around. She says, the dean and I are having lunch with George Boaz on Tuesday. Well, I mean, she would do that sort of thing. And everybody sat there. Nobody who even had the slightest idea who George Boaz was.
Mabel could be so naive.
She was wonderful.
Well, after you went to graduate school, was that then, you then went to India to run?
No, from
New York
school,
to,
I went to New York for a couple, I worked at Pate.
Pate, that's right.
I was there for,
India was
year
after
and a half,
year
and a half, I guess, I was in Pate's office. And then I thought, well, I want to The thing that had happened at MIT was that they had this program for study and abroad, not study, but work abroad in the summer.
Mm-hmm. And well, that's when you went to Genoa College.
That's right. And they said, who would like to go? And you had to be an American. That excluded all the top dogs in the class, like Charles Correa. And you had to, it was obviously, you know, you had to have a little bit of money, and half the students were married. And so I applied. I mean, I asked him this, of course, and Steve Shelby from Philadelphia, he and I went and worked. Well, I wrote to Henry to tell him I was going to do this, I guess. And he wrote back, and he very nicely, and he said, this. And I must have told him I've gotten a range of going on this ship, particular ship. And he wrote back and he said, it's going to be somebody else on that boat, somebody you know. Well, I couldn't imagine who he, you know, somebody from Raleigh, obviously, at least I thought. You know. Mm-hmm. The day I got on the boat in New York, I went to the passenger list, and I didn't have to go very far. It was Eduardo Catalano, Gloria Catalano, Alex Catalano, and Adrian. Adrian was 4 months old. Well, that's when we got very close, you see, because we were on the ship that took seven, eight days to cross the ocean.
Yeah, sure.
And you sit at the table four or five times a day with the same people, you see. And then we got over there, and that was the summer he was going with his family, meeting his family from Argentina, who were coming, his father, his mother, his one sister, I think, and a brother. The brother who was a doctor. And the sister who never married. That was it. They had a station wagon that when we got in Le Havre, they said, yeah, I was going to Paris. They said, we're going to Paris. We got in the car and drove with them. And I remember we thought, oh, this should be wasting the tape on all this. But anyhow, this is how I got to know Eduardo, and later on ran into them again in Venice on the boat going to Torcello. Mm. And Eduardo said, at the end of the summer, I'm taking this trip. Gloria's going back with the children, the family's going on. He said, I'm up to here. I've been chauffeuring all this time, doing nothing. I haven't been able to relax a minute. I've got this trip. I'm going to this boat to Greece, Yugoslavia, and Greece and Turkey. Why don't you try to, you know, get a ticket on it? Well, I immediately started trying. It's a long story, but finally I was able to get on it. And so he and I took this trip together. So that was 2 weeks on the... That's another long story, which has nothing to do with this. But that's how I got to really know Eduardo, mm-hmm. of course, that summer. Mm-hmm. And we've been, you know, very... Because as a student in his class, that was just one more.
Was that the summer of what, 50?
That was summer of 54.
Four.
And so in New York, I wanted to go back to Europe, and I went to the Institute of International Education. I said, what have you got in the thing? Well, they said, you've come too late, because last month we gave out the prizes to France and to Italy and to England and to all of this. They said, we've got one left. It's to Spain. I said, well, that's the way I want to go. Oh, they said, fine, but you got to apply in 2 weeks. I said, I can't do it in 2 weeks, and it's impossible. But all this, you got to get all this stuff together. They said, go ahead and apply. These are the secretaries. I said, I'll wait till next year. I started out the door. No, you must apply. I suddenly got the message. Nobody else had applied. This is how life was then.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, you know, it wasn't much. I think it was $2,000, which is nothing, but you could live like a king in Spain on $2,000 in those days. And I wrote to Henry, and he immediately, of course, gave me a good letter and all this. And so then, coming back from that was when he wrote and said somebody had dropped out or something. He needed somebody to teach the last semester or quarter or whatever it was. And so I went, and that was second year, and then I stayed for another 2 years. And, well, of course, it was a different scene then. We're in the new building, and the wing that George had designed, and my office was there, and the set studio was there. And there was a new crowd, although...
didn't we overlap for 1 year? What years were these?
Okay, let me look. This, I came back in 57, 56, I mean, the fall of 56, I was at 57. This would have been spring of 58.
So you were there 58, 59,
and all of
59, 60.
And all of 60.
Well, see, I started teaching when Wayne Taylor went on the Rome Prize. I started teaching 59. I taught from 59 to 61. I taught for 2 years. I was teaching first year drawing classes, and we had a lot of
it was an overlap, but
Then you left these to go to India.
That was in 60, the summer of 60. I'll tell you what happened. You must have been, because the big blow up came in the faculty meeting when we were trying to get the new curriculum passed, and George and Horatio had been, you know, developing this curriculum.
I'm not even sure I was invited to faculty meetings. I tell you the truth.
You would remember this one.
I don't think I ever went. I tell you the truth. I think I was given a limited number. I was teaching 4 drawing courses, freshman drawing, 2 freehand drawing classes, and 2 of these so-called technical, basic descriptive geometry.
Yeah.
And
well, that I was in that. I didn't think George was overseeing, was he?
Yeah, George was overseeing.
Oh, God, that was a nightmare. I had never had any of that he presented us with this kind of syllabus. It was meaningless.
Right.
I mean, it was all so abstract, I had the slightest idea what to do with it. And I got into the middle of the year when the students had already had a semester of it, so they were ahead of me. I knew I couldn't bluff. I just said, well, you know, let's see how we solve this problem. There's one bright guy in the class who would, anyhow. So that was 58. I could top in 59 too. But it was 59 or 60 that the new, they were trying to get revised the curriculum and get this reorganized in a way. And of course, Horatio and George wanted a more architectural direct, you know, and Duncan and the painters were pushing for a more school of design approach.
Yeah,
and of course, Henry was not taking sides with
either one. And
that's
continued forever, although
it's pretty much been resolved. But I'm telling you, it was all this trying to convince the people who had made up their minds in the middle. But Gil Thurlow agreed that he would vote, you know, for the curriculum. Well, we went to this faculty meeting. Henry at the end of the table, and everybody sitting around. It was huge. I mean, it was the table was as wide.
Oh, I remember that table.
Huge table. I mean, you know, from the other, it must have been 10 feet wide. I don't know why. Goodness knows how long. It wasn't that long wide, but it seemed like it's 6-7 feet. Anyhow. We were sitting there. Well, the thing came up. There was discussion. Finally, it came up for the vote. Well, I looked around. Gil Thurlow wasn't at the meeting. Oh, God, you know, the whole thing was either going to be a tie or we were going to lose. It was going to be tied, and then nobody was sure what Henry would do. I don't know whether he would vote in it or not. They started going around the table. I think it was something. It was a vote taken somehow, and I voted for it, and Horatio and George. Got to the end, the door opened, and Gil walked in. And he asked if he voted for it. Duncan Stewart, he threw a book across the table. It slammed, it slid the whole length of the table. He was so mad, he was furious. I thought, my God, this must have been going all the time.
Well,
I remember
that there was a lot of plotting and politicking going on, but I swear to God, I don't believe I was ever involved in those meetings.
You would remember
my memory is, I know that that was a big issue. Well, and did you taught second, third year design?
Second, yeah, the first end of that thing, and then the next year I had third year.
Hmm.
And the last year I had a combination of third and fifth. I don't know how it happened, but some of the fifth year students, they needed, and it was a strange, I felt sorry for them because I wouldn't feel qualified to give them very much, and I don't know why, but they were not, and I don't think they were the best students. I think they had a choice somehow, and some of them didn't want to go through all that pressure with them through or something.
They were trying to avoid Horatio.
Probably, yeah.
Because he was, I mean, Horatio, my impression is that he got increasingly kind of short-tempered, I don't mean that, but he got a bit more authoritarian as he went on, and he gave more and more directed projects where the students became sort of like draftsmen for various large schemes that he had. But when I was in the fifth year, I mean, we had a lot of, I thought, very imaginative projects.
Yeah.
That were, I mean, that was actually his first year teaching fifth year, because it was the year after Eduardo left.
That's right, yeah.
And we had projects that I really enjoyed working on, and of course, the stroke of luck was he permitted us to take the Paris Prize if we wanted to, and about six or eight of us took out 5 weeks or 6 weeks, it was something like that, to do the Paris Prize, because they only gave it at one time.
Sure.
You had to do it within the time. And
but you had studied with Horatio earlier.
Third year. He had a combination of third and fourth year.
Good Lord.
And I was so fortunate. I tell you the truth, when I hear your sequence, when I look at it, I had Roy Gusso for first year. The second year was a mixed blessing, but it wasn't bad. I had Vernon Shogren, and Vernon was not bad for second year. It was pretty good.
I didn't know him. I've never met him.
Well, he had, I think, real, I mean, he was, in later years, I think he was a terrible teacher, but he was pretty good at that time, and I felt like, then I had Horatio, and then I had George, then I had Horatio again. I tell you the truth, I had some wonderful
teachers. You had the cream of it. You really did.
I mean, Jim
Fitzgibbon was a very important influence in the school, but I didn't feel that one got very much from his. He was kind of flippant about so many things.
Oh, I know.
And he walked through, and, well, why don't you do so-and-so like this? And, you know, with the supposed to be a stroke of genius or something, it really helped somehow. I mean, maybe it may help some people, but it didn't.
Both Harry and Eduardo reflected to me that they felt that, you know, even though he's kind of mercurial and always was, that he was so flaky. And Harry said, well, he says, Jim was so confused at that time. He was still trying to decide whether he wanted to be Bruce Goff or Bucky Fuller.
That's right.
And he said he was Stevie. He
and didn't see the difference between the two, I think. That was the other thing. So in the limelight of the day. Oh, God, no.
If we could sum up, I don't know the, is there any kind of, I mean, I think you've already said in a way about the, when you got to MIT, you saw something, you know, you could really understand something about the school, but I don't know.
Well, I think too, you know, you and I were both fortunate also to be in a new, young school with a totally new, dedicated faculty that was so excited and were trying to establish something that out of nothing, because it was absolutely certainly nothing there when they started. I mean, it was a problem with what to do with all these people that were left over on tenure and so on. And except for a few people, do you remember Morley Williams?
Mm-hmm.
He was in landscape, and I took a course in him. He was very, very good. He had laid out gardens at Mount Vernon. I don't know how they... And his wife was an architect, and she was a very good lecturer. She, when he was ill away once, she lectured. She was excellent. I don't know what in the world he was doing down there in that department they had before, but and Ross Shoemaker, he was nothing. That's how he taught the course in office practice. I mean, he was unbelievable. He was just nothing.
You know, he expected to be appointed as dean. He wrote a letter applying for it, and some people on the faculty, of course, the original faculty nominated him as well.
Yeah,
and he said he would take the job for $7,500. It was real interesting. He applied. He said he expected, you know, blah 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 blah. And it was. I've gotten a number of letters that came out of this thing when Henry was appointed. But I won't tell you on this thing. But I'll tell you a little bit later. There's fascinating things about Henry that came out in this.
But we were there not only with a new school that was, as I say. I mean, it was the birth of something, which is always an exciting time, you know, trying to formulate a whole new school. And the fact that it was at a time that, you know, the modern movement was just taking off in a sense that, you know, there was so many things to point to and see. And every new building that went up, if it was, you know, I don't remember when Lever House was built, but I mean, there were these new buildings that were demonstrations of what we were trying to be we were being told about. So, I mean, this was all very important. Today, I mean, there's no, you know, what can you do?
It's got to be confusing to
see everybody going off in a different direction with no, you know, and every year it's a new, every 2 or 3 years is a new, whole new, you know, way to go. And then there was the other thing that I think was very interesting, and I'm not sure whether this is a good or bad, but it was at a time when we were getting a lot of mature students returning from the experiences in the army and the services in some capacity, some of them in battle. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to recall the name of the fellow, I can see him right now, nice fellow with white hair, who was in with Al Cameron, close to Al Cameron in that class ahead of us, who was a bombardier. And he, I don't know how many missions he had flown, you know, Second World War. He has died since, many years ago, I think. But we had, and then we had people, it was Bruno Leon, you see, who was very mature compared to any of the rest of us in the class. And this meant a great deal, certainly to us. And because they had another kind of perspective and another way of looking at things. And this I think, was something else had to do with the times, because the GIs returning had this thing that you don't, of course you get mature people from time to time now, but you don't get them. Certainly when I was teaching, it was not the case. I mean, all the students were...
The students were younger. Mostly from North Carolina.
Yeah, too. I mean, there were others. I had, three of the students I flunked, I'll never forget. One had a graduate degree in English from Yale. What in the world he was doing that? I don't know. You could not. I talked to him, you know. I said, you know, I think it was a mistake. He had come and probably had been, because of that, had been put too far. He should have started in the first year, and then he was put in the second or third year right off the bat without any experience. Couldn't draw a line. You know which.